We're back on Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. This hour of Canucks Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. And of course, that is today. Canucks with a game day. They are at the San Jose Sharks tonight for a 7:30 puck drop. Let's bring in our next guest. Joins us every Thursday. It's Canucks analyst Landon Ferraro. Thanks for this, Landon. How are you?
Doing pretty good, guys. How you doing?
Oh, you know, we've had a lot to talk about over the last week, so it's been good. But let's get your thoughts on the news of the last 24 hours. Marcus Pettersson, he's now played two games for the Canucks, and that was enough for Patrick Alvin and company to say, yep, we'll give you the money you want, $33 million. Just sign right here. Cross the I's, cross the T's, dot the I's, and it's done. What do you make of what's done with Marcus Pettersson?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I don't know about you guys, but, like, I don't get to go into somewhere new and they just give you a brand-new contract saying, here, take this. We want you to come.
Yeah, that would be nice.
An extra $33 million. Like, it's unreal.
Yeah.
But, no, like, he was exactly what, in, you know, in his first two games, he did exactly what they've been looking for a guy to do all season, and basically what they've been talking about. And you know, it's not a hidden thing that they've been looking at Pettersson for a long time and just trying to find a way to get that done when the time was right. And you know, he came in and instantly brought stability to the back end, and amongst, you know, some other pieces coming in that, like, that D-core looked and played completely different than what it has been all year, and that's still with Quinn Hughes out of the lineup.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're all really curious to see what it looks like with Quinn back, and that may wait until Saturday perhaps, and maybe not until after the Four Nations, depending on how his health goes. But it's pretty incredible what not only getting Marcus Pettersson in has done, and also just the way they've managed Elias Pettersson on the back end too, and just how the pieces have slotted together. It's pretty incredible what a little bit of more mobility, puck moving, and just more competence can do to a blue line.
For sure. And then not only that, but some physicality as well. Like,
yeah,
you know, Elias Pettersson, you know, like, he had some solid hits, especially the two down either sideboards. Like, you know, he's aggressive, he's jumping in, and, you know, he jumps in trying to help some teammates when they get taken advantage of, too. Like, it's everything that you want to see from a young guy, but not only just for him and bringing that to the team, but, like, for all the other guys that have been here and been dealing with all this stuff to see excitement and, you know, aggressiveness in their play, not, you know, kind of playing with some scars of what's been going on. Like, it's exactly what the team needs at this point right now. I'm kind of surprised how much it's calmed down the defensive zone. And not only that, but got the team on the offense quicker with quicker transitions and better plays coming out of the zone instead of just flipping it.
Yeah, and Quinn Hughes isn't even in the lineup right now.
I know, like, that's the part that you have to keep reminding yourself. And, like, you know, I was talking to Sad about it the other day, but, like, it was, like, obviously you want Quinn in the lineup every night, but, like, it's kind of nice to see, especially the first game, like, what it looks like with no coverall, no Band-Aid around it, right? So to see how the team and the D-core is reacting right now, and then you slide back in a Norris winning defenseman, like, things look quite different than they did a week ago.
Well, some of our listeners thought I was galaxy braining it yesterday when I said it might actually be okay in the short term for Quinn Hughes to not be in the lineup and the team to build confidence that, hey, we can still generate offense when Quinn isn't around. And that's exactly what they've done these last two games. And obviously you want Quinn there long term and you want him to get as healthy as possible, but you know, they're surviving without Quinn Hughes, which you couldn't really say through the first 50 games of the season. I mean, we all saw the numbers, what this team was with Quinn Hughes on the ice and what they were without him on the ice. And they were just living to survive when Quinn Hughes was taking a rest on the bench.
Yeah, and like the other exciting part of Marcus Pettersson in his first two games here with Quinn out especially is, like, he eats, you know, just over 22 and over 25 minutes in the two games. So now when Quinn gets back, like, he's not going to be playing 25 minutes a night. Pettersson won't be. So he drops back into that kind of 22-minute range, which he's been averaging all year. Like, just saving those couple extra minutes, like, he'll be able to be a bit more aggressive in different areas. Like, he knew he was going to have to play bigger minutes, and you still have to play the same game and play it right, but you don't take that extra, you know, run at a guy in a corner if you know that, you know, you have an extra few minutes on you that night.
Yeah, and I think, you know, overall, just looking at how a guy like Filip Hronek played without Quinn and seeing him show his upside and peak, and I think that was really encouraging from the Blue Line's perspective. As far as the forwards that have been added to the group, I mean, Filip Hedl has been a revelation through two games. And Landon, is this actually the guy we're going to get, or is this just like the adrenaline and enthusiasm of being in a new team and just playing your best hockey for a couple of games?
No, honestly, like, I really meant it on the intermissions the other night when I was saying that, like, I really think that each game that he plays, obviously he's going to have little step backs here and there, just like every single player, but, like, I truly think that every game that he plays here, he's just going to get better and better because he has more opportunity. He has the light at the end of the tunnel. Like, back in New York, Look at the players in front of him. Like, there's no way to grab more ice time there. Like, he was kind of locked in where he was, and now he's getting to play here, getting power play time, getting a lot of five-on-five time. Like, he's able to control the puck more. Like, you can see how he's always trying to find his open ice when he doesn't have the puck, and when he does, he moves his feet, and he's big, and he drives the nets. Like, I think he's just going to get better as he goes along. Like, I'm not saying he's going to turn into a superstar, but at the same time, like, he's a very skilled, very hard player when he decides to put his, you know, put a shoulder down and get to the net, especially.
Well, and some of the plays he's making, slaloming through defenders, skating at speed at the same time, you know, it's an element that this forward group didn't really have before both he and Drew O'Connor showed up, for that matter.
Yeah, I was just about to say, like, those two coming into the lineup, I mean, their numbers show it, so it's not like it was a complete surprise because they're up in the, you know, high 90th percentile in basically every skating category. But, you know, especially that first game, like, O'Connor blowing up the left wing, I want to say it was three times that he did it. Like, from the first time he did it, you're like, ooh, I haven't seen that this year. Like, consistently from a Canucks forward. And then, you know, Hedl ends up taking it to the net on that low drive. Like, again, me and Sat were talking in the intermissions the other game. Like, that's something that you don't see from this team, especially lately. And so they completely changed how this team looked, and it felt lighter. It felt like guys were excited to kind of push the envelope that way.
That overall enthusiasm that we've seen from the group, and again, how much of that is just in the moment, adrenaline, excitement, and you get the bump because a couple of trades have happened, and how much of it is this team truly showing its true nature, so to speak? And this is all without Quinn, of course, and also without Elias Pettersson playing at anywhere near the level we know he can play. So do you think we're going to see this type of hockey consistently, like a fast, aggressive Canucks team that is playing well to their details, but is actually able to push the envelope and put together nice, clean exits and entries?
Yeah, like, I really do. Like, I think the team is good enough, and I think that, you know, like, we've been talking about it forever, just like everyone else, but, like, I don't think we can oversell how heavy that feeling in the room would have been with everything that's been going on. Like, you just, like, usually the dressing room is the place that you get to go and just escape everything else in your life, and you're like, hey, I can just focus on hockey. Like, it's always been the one thing in my life that I've loved and never had my issue, and I just get to go play. And now, all of a sudden, like, that dressing room is a place that you're like, oh, man, like, I don't want to get caught in there and have to talk again, and, you know, there's so much going on. And now that, you know, it's not fully behind them, but for the most part, it's behind them. Like, the guys can just kind of take a deep, or not take a deep breath, but take a good exhale and just, like, accept that, okay, like, for now, this is what it is, and our team's playing good. We have a good feeling going. Like, let's just keep rolling.
Yeah, it feels like a new coach bump almost in a way. You change the mix in the room, you change some of the faces, you get guys that bring a new energy and breathe some fresh air into the room, and all of a sudden the team as a whole starts doing the things that Rick Tocchet has been harping about for the last couple of months. Hold on to pucks, skate with it. Don't just go low to high. Don't just defer. Attack the net, attack the space. A couple of new faces, a couple of new players in here, and it's changed just entirely the whole mentality of the team, it feels like.
Yeah, and the other part that you can't overlook in this situation too is, like, you can look at it for all those positive things, and it's 100% right, like those are all true, but the one part we haven't said is that just the fact of all those guys just saw JT Miller get traded.
Yeah,
like it's one of their best players, and their team has not been playing the way that it was designed to play, and the way that, you know, they're not where they thought they would be after such a good step last year. And well, their management went and did something. They traded one of their best forwards. Like, it's an eye-opener to guys, too, yeah. Of, like, okay, like, if they can trade him, they can easily find a place for me to go.
Yeah.
Like, if they can make that work, you know? So, like, there's a reason why, you know, it's a coach bump, and then, you know, when there's a big-time trade like this and a guy gets going, like, it's kind of the same thing. You're like, I better play my best right now because, like, there's changing pieces right going on.
I think we can put to bed a little bit the narrative that Tocchet is trying to coach these guys into only dumping and chasing all the time. I mean, it's pretty clear, even the way that he's praised Hedl and O'Connor and some of these other guys for the way that they're attacking in game, that this is what he's trying to preach and has been trying to preach to other players on the roster.
For sure. And I mean, like, if you listen to his, you know, after morning skate talks and after game, like all that stuff, like, it's not like he's been sitting there saying, like, I don't want the guys to think and I want them to do exactly what I say and just throw it here and then shoot it there. Like, he's been saying, like, I need guys to make plays. I need this. I need guys to be doing things offensively. Like, this isn't good enough. Like, it's not a sustainable way to play the game of hockey and win if you can't score goals. So, like, unless he's going and saying that to us and going back in the room and telling guys, don't go try any different plays and things like that, which I find hard to believe. Like, he's been pretty clear in his messaging that he wants more creativity, wants more zone time. So for guys to come in and kind of do it immediately and play it kind of exactly the way that he's been talking about here, like they've been listening for the last 3 months to what Rick Tocchet's been saying because they've been doing it. And now it's starting to just get the other guys moving again. They feel a bit lighter. They get a bit of a kick when JT gets moved out of here, a guy that's been here a long time and been a big piece. Like, there's so many different factors that go into the reason why the guys have been playing, you know, a faster, more up-tempo kind of connected game.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of their success is going to hinge on the player we talk about the most, and it's time for a weekly discussion about Elias Pettersson and where his game is at. And, you know, we're certainly even, I think we're even past the grasping at straws at point where we're kind of like, well, what if, you know, he goes away to the Four Nations? Maybe then he finds his game afterwards. First it was like, maybe this happens, maybe that happens. And each time it's kind of still the same process with him. Does it seem likely that he can find his game this season, or are we at a point where he needs another offseason to find his game? I just have a heart, because people keep asking us, like, when is he going to turn it around? Is he going to turn it around? And I find that question impossible to answer right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think to make you feel better and myself, because I'm honestly, like, I'm kind of right there with you. Like, we've dissected, and everyone has dissected this a million different ways and really have not been able to kind of crack the code here. And, you know, Jim Rutherford has been in hockey more than all of us put together in years and time in the game. And even he's said, like, this is one of the tougher situations that we've been in, or that I've been in my whole career. Like, it's a tricky situation, you know, through it all. So, you know, it's, your guess is as good as mine. Like, I can sit here and say that, yeah, like, I honestly do think it's an off-season thing, because it's not something that can just be done in a week.
Yeah.
or it would have been done by this point. Like, I think it's, you know, he needs a full summer of training. He needs to change up how he goes about his summers. I know that's been a big, you know, bigger thing in the past as well of, you know, he's not the biggest of guys, and like, but you need to maximize what your body can do. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I wasn't the biggest guy. I could never put weight on, but I found a way to find as much strength as I possibly could in my tiny frame. You know, everyone has a max, but you got to be able to find that, because it's only going to help the rest of your game. Like, if you look at Pettersson's game, it's all about body positioning and mm-hmm. using his speed when he's using his speed. And, like, those are lacking right now. So until he can get that moving and, you know, have a reset mentally that, like, it's not about getting back to being the, you know, all-star and all of that. Like, that's still there for him because he has the skill. He hasn't lost it. But, like, just start about being like, I need to be the best first-line center on this team yeah. right now. And then you set your bar a little higher than that and just, like, keep climbing. You can't go for the mountaintop after you've slid down this far. Like, you gotta take it step by step.
Well, and the other thing that's obvious, I mean, that's really clear now, you mentioned not using that speed, and, you know, maybe it would be easier for everybody if we didn't have the puck tracking data and the speed tracking data, but we do have that now, right? So it's not just like he looks like he's slower. He is slower. The data's been here. We talked about it for much of the season. When you look at, you know, his fastest speed, his burst, where he used to be a couple of years ago versus where he's now, he used to be in the top of the league, near the top of the league as far as his top speed went and his burst rate. Now those are down into the 50th percentile or below, which is pretty jarring. It's a big difference. So how much of that is mental? How much of it is physical? But, you know, we'll talk to Alvin when he's coming up. We'll ask him, see if he has any better answers to it. But when you see a clear evidence of his pace not being there, it just makes you wonder what the reason is. Is it an ailment? Is it mental? Like, why can't he be as quick right now? Has he just lost that speed? I know he mentioned the knee tendonitis last year, but it's hard to pin down exactly what the reason is.
Yeah, and I mean, without having all the info, it's almost impossible. Like, you're just kind of, like, you could come up with, like, very reasonable reasons that it could be. It could be that tendonitis has been an issue and he wasn't able to train as good as he normally could have. Like, that's totally plausible. It could also be that he didn't quite put as much into it as he thought he should have, and this is the result. But it can also be a bunch of things, right? Like, unless we know exactly if there's an injury involved or not, then, like, because I don't look at him and think that he's just lost the want to skate fast. Like, he does, especially on the defensive side of the puck. Like, you can see he's working very hard. Like, I'm not questioning his work rate. It's more on the offensive side when it needs to be quicker and things like that. Like, that to me is leg strength. Like, to be and be able to pop through different holes and be quick and explosive, like, you have to have your legs dialed in, and if they're not there, then that push is gone. There's nothing about it, has nothing to do with effort. It's just whether the strength is there or not.
Brock Besser now becomes the biggest contract question mark for this team. Obviously, you know, there's Drew O'Connor and Kevin Lankinen that are pending unrestricted free agents, but Brock is of a different status. He's going to command quite a bit on the market this summer should he get there. It feels like, you know, given how quickly they got the Marcus Pettersson deal done, I can understand why some listeners are like, hey, how do you think Brock feels about this, that they got that one done so quickly? But it just feels like this is more of a negotiation going on here where they want to keep Brock, but they gotta keep it at the right number given where his status as a 40-goal player from last year sits him at.
Yeah, and I mean, like, this is something whether you agree with this management group or not, like, personally, I respect the fact that they make their decision whether on grading a player and, like, this is what we think he's worth and this is what we think we can pay him and it's all right for our cap situation and everything like that, where it fits in on the team, and they don't really budge. Like, they don't let too much emotion get into it. Like, Brock Besser's been here for a lot of years and played some very good hockey. He's know, the fans like him, the teammates like him. It's not an easy decision. But at the same time, just like Alvin and Rutherford has said, like, it has to work from both sides. And, you know, like, you always hear different reporters asking when they are talking to those guys of, like, you know, Brock has made it known he wants to stay here. And you can almost see Patrick the one time, like, he starts kind of smiling, like, yeah, that's nice. Like, but it's got, like, the numbers got to work. And that's what it comes down to. So, I mean, Besser for me is something that, you know, you kind of said it, like, they got Pettersson done really, really quick. And so it shows it can get done, but is that the Canucks not really wanting to get it done, or is it that Besser's side is asking for something they don't think is reasonable? So, you know, it's an interesting situation. Again, as a big part of this team, you've just moved another big part of a team, of your team. You know, it's an interesting time in that front office. There's no real easy days, no easy questions.
No, there isn't. And there's more questions to come before the March 7th trade deadline. Landon, always appreciate the time. Thanks for this.
Yeah, have a good one, guys.
There he is, Landon Ferraro, Canucks analyst, joining us here as he does every single Thursday on Canucks Central. A lot still to get to. Josh Yoey is going to join us covering the Penguins at The Athletic. Obviously spoke with Jim Rutherford after the Marcus Pettersson deal, and we'll get his take on Marcus Pettersson as a player. Alex Ovechkin has just scored number 879 with a goalie in the net. So that's good.
That's good.
Yeah.
Why are you so on the empty net goals?
I'm pointing out that there was a goalie in the net for goal number 879.
So he scored a few empty net goals. Now, that's what goal scorers do every once in a while.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. It just seems like it's happening a lot for Ovi.
Why just stop?
You just want your old take to be right so bad?
No, I don't. What did I say? I've already conceded that he is going to get to the record.
You're not
going to
like it, though. You
never said anything of the sort.
You're fine with him getting there, but you might take issue with how he gets there.
Yeah, he's now scored on 180 different goalies.
Yeah, that's a lot of goalies.
That's
a lot of goalies.
Can they do like the...
How many different empty nets has he scored?
Yeah, maybe they'll do the... What was it? One of the beer companies, they did the promo with Lionel Messi after he scored his, I don't know, 500 or 700.
Oh, yeah. They sent the beers to everybody.
They sent the beers to all the goalies. Different goalies he scored on. It's pretty sad.
It was like a plaque, too, that came with it. It was actually really cool. It was a great bit.
Different level. So we'll see what happens, obviously, with Ovi. We'll keep an eye on that. Canucks and San Jose Sharks coming up tonight. But up next, Josh Yoey of The Athletic. Also get an update on Sidney Crosby and where his status is at for the Four Nations. It's coming up next on Canuck Central.
Catch up on what happened in Vancouver sports with Halford and Brough in the morning. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour number two on Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Lots still to get to. Patrick Alvin, GM of the Canucks, going to join us in about a half hour's time. There was an update on Quinn Hughes and his status for the Four Nations from earlier today. Our friend and buddy, Ian McIntyre, of course, sportsnet.ca. Canucks hope to see Quinn Hughes play Saturday versus Toronto, but it's largely captain's call for Team USA at Four Nation. GM Patrick Alvin said this: Quinn is extremely professional. He knows his body and what he can do or not do, so I trust him a lot. We're supporting him in his position. That's from Patrick Alvin. We'll talk more to Patrick coming up shortly. Let's bring in our next guest covering the Penguins for The Athletic. It is Josh Yoey. Thanks for this, Josh. How are you?
Good. My pleasure. How are you?
We're doing really well. You know, it's funny, like a lot of Canucks fans are being like, nah, don't let Quinn go to Four Nations. Let him rest for the rest of the season. While also at the same time, because we're Canadian, we're like, let Sid go to Four Nations. We need him. So it's a bit of a double standard there. What is Sidney Crosby's status moving forward right now?
You know, it's funny. Penguins fans love Sid so much. It's pretty much like, you know, the Penguins stink this year. So just, you know, for Sid's sake, go to Four Nations. Go play some meaningful hockey. If you win, great. Go Canada. For those who don't know, Sid took a hit the other night in a game against the Devils and left the ice immediately, came back, said he was okay afterwards, didn't practice the next day. And then today, he practiced for a few moments with the Penguins, and then he left and went to another ice pad and just skated by himself for about 45 minutes. I can tell you right now, I watched him skate by himself for 45 minutes. He did drills, skating, you name it. He took four or five shots the whole time. And there wasn't a whole lot of velocity on them. He's got some kind of an injury. I don't know if it's his left wrist or elbow or shoulder, something in the left arm area that certainly is impacting his ability to shoot the puck right now. He hasn't been ruled out for the games this weekend against the Rangers and Flyers for the Penguins. Obviously, the Four Nations is on everyone's mind. I have no doubt he's going to play at the Four Nations. My question is just how healthy will he be by then? Because he did not look himself today just shooting the puck. Clearly, he's favoring something.
Yeah, and that is unfortunate. And, you know, as Canadians, we're all hoping that he is going to be okay. And ultimately, we get to see him because he's not getting any younger, right? And we all marvel at how good he is still. And you get to watch him on a regular basis. Like, how is he still doing it at the level he is at the age of 37?
At 37, he's still so good. And I've told people all season, he's really been much better than his statistics would indicate. He doesn't have a whole lot of help on this Penguins team. This is probably the most unimpressive roster he's played on in 20 seasons in Pittsburgh. He could certainly have gaudier point totals than he has. And I'll be honest, I'm really looking forward to watching him play in these games in the tournament because, you know, the Penguins aren't going to make the playoffs. Everybody pretty much acknowledges that at this point. And just to see him play some meaningful hockey, and I know what it means to him when he puts the Team Canada jersey on. It's something he really takes seriously. And oh, by the way, my colleague Chris Johnson wrote this the other day. Crosby's record all time when wearing the Canadian jersey is 45-5, which doesn't even sound real. But that's, yeah, it's like a Russian Red Army number like they put up in the 70s. I mean, it's incredible, but it just means so much to him. Anytime I bring it up with him, the Olympics or even the Four Nations, something about his face just changes, and he becomes very alert, and you know, he's ready to talk about it. And I'm sure he will do anything he can to get his body ready for starting next Wednesday.
It's like as automatic as Prime Tiger going into a Sunday final round with a lead. That's pretty much Sidney Crosby with Team Canada. And, you know, I know every fan base around the league has had these thoughts and wondered, like, you know, how does Sid feel about where the Penguins currently are? And I'd imagine he wouldn't have signed the extension if he didn't want to be a Penguin for life, right?
Well, that's right. Boy, every time there are trade rumors, especially with Colorado, of course, because of his friendship with Nathan MacKinnon. Boy, there's always a number of people on social media from the Denver area who want to talk about Sidney Crosby coming to town. I just think he's accomplished everything he's wanted to accomplish in the NHL, and he's so comfortable in Pittsburgh. And I always tell people, like, he had two real heroes in life. And his two hockey heroes are Steve Yzerman and Mario Lemieux. And those are two guys who only ever played for one franchise. And that just means so much to him. But I will say this for Canucks fans, and I've said this for years. Like, I don't, you know, Sid's looked me in the eye and said, I don't want to play anywhere else. I never will. So I believe him. But just for fun to play the game, like, everyone brings up Colorado. Like, Vancouver would actually make the most sense to me. Just given his relationship with Rick Tocchet and Jim Rutherford and all the former Penguins there, if he ever were to leave, not that I'm suggesting that he would, but that was always the one that made the most sense in my view, just in terms of how comfortable he would be.
Well, I mean, you know, we can talk about 2010 all we want, but scoring one goal isn't the biggest thing. But at the end of the day, you know, if he is going to leave, I'd imagine a player like Sid would also probably like to play in a Canadian market.
Probably. I mean, yeah, he's Canadian, of course, and he grew up cheering for the Canadians, in fact, the team that drafted his dad. I will also say, and you know, I don't mean to suggest that Sid has ever said negative things about the Canadian markets, because he hasn't, but he's an extraordinarily private man, and I don't know how much privacy he would receive if he were ever playing in a Canadian market.
Yeah,
like, I've heard enough stories of him, like, just trying to go out to dinner in Toronto and, you know, things of that nature. I think it's pretty tough for him. So So I don't know if he would necessarily enjoy it, but on some level, of course he would. I think any hockey player, I mean, I'm an American sports writer, and I get a thrill every time I cover a game in Canada. There's just something different about it. There's just a different electricity in games in those buildings that's undeniable, and I'm sure Sidney Crosby knows that better than anybody. So I'm sure there's a part of him that might enjoy that, but I hate to rain on the parade for everyone who likes to talk about it, but the odds of him ever leaving Pittsburgh are very, very small. He's very content with, I think, what he's done.
Yeah.
And he's a creature of habit, and he's just so comfortable where he is.
Well, I'm not going to lie, Josh. Our listeners are going to hang on to hope, given the door that you opened with Jim Rutherford and Rick Tocchet.
He does love those two. Yeah. He does.
We know. I mean, it feels like Rick brings up Sidney Crosby's name like every other day in his discussions with the media. He's like, oh, yeah, Quinn, like the only other guy I've seen trained like Quinn Hughes is Sidney Crosby. And it always seems to come up. Or Sid texted me the other day about Marcus Pettersson and how great of a teammate he is. It's just keeps bringing up Sid whenever he possibly can. And you're right about the Canadian market thing. A lot of players, like I know it can wear on a lot of players. Obviously, we have the quotes from Ryan O'Reilly when he was going through unrestricted free agency, and he essentially mentioned there was a Canadian tax you would have to pay to get Ryan O'Reilly to stick in a Canadian market at that point. But Marcus Pettersson mentioned it after signing his deal, like his first game at Rogers Arena, and just how impressive it was with the fans, and how it you know, hockey matters, and you love that as a player, and it essentially can bring the best out of some guys. And I think that's one of the reasons Marcus Pettersson has signed on for a long-term deal here already. What do you make of Marcus Pettersson as a player and how you see him fitting here in Vancouver?
Well, first of all, I would like to mention that Marcus Pettersson, the person, is a really special guy. He is, hockey's filled with great people. He is literally one of the best human beings I've ever dealt with through the Penguins locker room over the years. I mean, he is the real deal. You want him around younger players, and he is tough as nails. The Penguins have had an issue for years where not a lot of team toughness, not a lot of people will step in for Crosby when he's getting cheap-shotted. Marcus is always the one who would, even though he's the skinniest guy in the room. He didn't care. He will fight. He's fought Tom Wilson. He's fought other heavyweights. He is a great teammate. He is a good player. He's not a great player, but he's a good one. He's a legitimate top four defenseman. He's at his best when he plays with defensemen who are offensive minded. You put him with a guy like Quinn Hughes or a guy with that mindset, and he takes care of them. He's just dependable. He's a good penalty killer. So the contract was certainly a lucrative one, but I think the Canucks kind of had to do that. You give up a first-round pick to get a guy, you really can't let him walk. It gave Marcus and his agent a lot of a lot of leverage, I think. But he'll live up to that contract. He's not a superstar, but he's just going to be a good, dependable top four guy for the next 6 years.
Well, and his name has been in the trade rumors the past couple of years, and obviously he wasn't moved. Ultimately, why do you think he wasn't moved the last couple of years? Has his value changed in the view of other people? Has his play improved, or did they always want something of value in order to part ways with him?
No, Marcus, they didn't trade him in the last couple of years because they were holding out hope that they could still be a playoff team. And if they were going to be a playoff team, well, you'd want somebody like Marcus Pettersson in a playoff series. But in the last year, Kyle Dubas has really come to the conclusion that it really is time to rebuild in Pittsburgh. And the problem is, so many of the Penguins have no trade clauses. I mean, it's absurd. Almost half the roster does. And so there's only so many guys that make sense to move. And it was just Marcus's turn. Just like Jake Guentzel was an unrestricted free agent last season. It's not that they didn't want to keep Jake. Of course they did. But when you only have so many movable assets and you got to get some prospects in the system, Kyle Dubas did what he had to do. It was the same thing with Marcus. So there was no desire to trade him. There was simply desire to get prospects and draft picks. And when the first round pick was dangled, I don't think Kyle could say no to that.
Yeah, and it's a pretty interesting bet that they make here with the Rangers too. Obviously a bit of an aging team. If that pick does transfer to next year, who knows what could happen. But I know it's been speculated, hey, maybe the Penguins try to trade that pick themselves for maybe a player in their early 20s. What do you think Kyle Dubas's plans are with that first round draft choice?
It's conceivable. You know, it depends. I mean, it could end up being in 2026, mm-hmm. which by all accounts is the far better draft.
Yeah.
So that's something to keep in mind as well. But I think all options are available. Kyle has made it very clear that he wants to get young NHL-ready players. He prefers that over draft picks or prospects, which is understandable. But, listen, if the Penguins end up getting the 8th overall pick on their own accord and that pick becomes the 18th overall pick, like, they very well might just draft two prospects and finally have a couple of first-rounders in their system because they don't have many, only a couple as we speak right now. So I just think it gives him more flexibility to look around and see what's at.
Yeah, and the other player the Canucks got from Pittsburgh was Drew O'Connor, and he's already impressed in Vancouver with his speed, his size, his ability to forecheck, and the Canucks are already...
I want to trade.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
They don't necessarily want to trade Raquel. I don't think they do, but if you can get a first-round pick for Marcus Pettersson, and if, Cody Ceci and... that package that went to Dallas are good for a first-round pick. What could they get for Rickard Rakell?
Right.
I think that's what the Penguins are starting to think about.
Right, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I wanted to get your thoughts on Drew O'Connor as well. And, he was the other part that came over in Vancouver. And the first couple games he's played already, he's looked really good. Like, he's used his size and speed, and the Canucks are already trying to keep him here long-term. What do you think of the way Drew O'Connor played in Pittsburgh? And does it make sense for the Canucks to invest in him beyond this season?
Yeah, it does. There is a lot of untapped potential in Drew. I mean, this is a kid fast. He is tenacious on the puck, on the forecheck especially. He's good defensively. He's a pretty good penalty killer. He can do it all. For whatever reason, he just doesn't score as much as he should. There was a stretch at the end of last season he played on Sidney Crosby's left wing after the Gensel trade, and he had 6 goals in the last 12 games of the season. And we all thought, okay, he's starting to realize all that potential, and he just never put it together again this season, and he went into another long scoring drought. But I've always thought this is a guy who can be a 20-goal scorer in the NHL and who can help you win in so many different ways. And also, like Marcus, he's just a great kid. I mean, he is really wonderful in the room, one of Sidney Crosby's favorite people in the locker room. They were really close. So, I think Drew's worth taking a chance on, and I think at worst, he's a good bottom six player, but I think he can be a really good third liner who scores 15 to 20 goals a year. I still think all that potential is there, and if they can just get it out of him, I'm telling you, he can be a really good NHL player.
I know there's been a lot of criticism coming the way of Kyle Dubas and the way that he's handled this situation since coming into the job with the Pittsburgh Penguins. And people look at the Erik Karlsson deal and the contract given to Ryan Graves and Tristan Jarry, and that was the offseason. You had cap space and you fumbled the moves that you did make. What is the temperature level around Kyle Dubas and the job he's done?
I think most Penguins fans would probably give him about a C right now. He screwed up really bad in his first month on the job. There's no doubt about it. And you mentioned all the things. I don't blame him for the Karlsson trade that much. He did get rid of a lot of bad contracts in that trade, and I'm not going to blame him for taking a chance on a Hall of Fame player.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Erik Karlsson has been absolutely terrible in Pittsburgh. Watching him play every day, I can see why he's never won anything. As gifted as he is, he is a legit Hall of Famer, but man, just the mindless mistakes he makes on a regular basis. It drives you nuts just watching the guy. But the other moves that you mentioned, the Jarry contract has been a disaster. The Ryan Graves contract, probably an even bigger disaster. And what happened was Kyle Dubas was trying to replenish the system, but also keep Sidney Crosby and Mike Sullivan happy at the same time and trying to give them pieces that could help them still win. And after the first few months, Kyle realized, you know what? this team's not close to winning. We got to rebuild it, whether Sid and Gino and Mike Sullivan like it or not. From that point on, I think Dubas has done a good job. The Penguins have 27 draft picks in the next 3 years. They only had 25 draft picks in the last five seasons. So they're finally getting this flood of draft picks and prospects, which is exactly what they need. So from that standpoint, I think Kyle has done well. But some of the moves he made in the summer of 23, they're going to be paying for those moves for a long time. There's no doubt about that.
Josh, we appreciate the time and the insights as always. Thanks so much for this today.
Yeah. My pleasure, guys. Take care.
There is Josh Yowie of The Athletic. With some really interesting thoughts on the Pittsburgh Penguins. Obviously, Sidney Crosby and his links to Vancouver.
Links to Vancouver? Yeah. Jake in Nanaimo says, sounds like the Canucks are getting Crosby.
We can't put that on Josh, but...
That was pretty funny.
It was funny to hear him say that, and I know our listeners will hang on to those words for dear life.
Drew O'Connor, one of his best friends.
Yeah, you're not going to radio Josh Yowie, are you?
No, I wasn't.
Okay. You put that out like that's the one you clip.
I thought about it.
If Crosby were to wave, it would be to Vancouver to join back up with Jim Rutherford and
he said it was
leave everything else out.
He just said it's his opinion.
Yes.
Yeah, he didn't say like a report. But that was pretty funny.
And also, that there's basically no chance that Sid is leaving Pittsburgh.
And hey, don't blame us. Like he brought it up on his own accord. We did not ask him about Vancouver.
We did not. Not specifically, at least. But
Reach, are you saying you were leading him?
I was doing nothing of the sort. Marcus Pettersson, some good insights there on the teammate that he can be. And I think that's a big part of, you know, the commitment the Canucks made over the last 24 hours, knowing the character of Marcus Pettersson and also what he can do for them. And as we've talked about ad nauseum, the Canucks don't need a power play dynamo to add to their decor. They need a steady player that can really eat some PK minutes, eat the burden of taking big shutdown minutes so Quinn doesn't have to deal with that. And you can get the best out of Quinn that way. That's more of what the Canucks needed than, you know, another true puck mover that profiles as a guy like, as I've said with Bowen Byram, as a guy who wants to play top power play minutes, that's the best way to get the most out of that player. It's just not the Canucks need is different from what other teams might be.
Yeah, it's completely different, right? And the thing that's going to be fascinating is finding out who the best partner is for him. Mm-hmm. We know they love supercharging Hughes and Hronek together. And at the same time, I thought Hronek was fantastic last game.
With Derek Forbert, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm really curious what a Pettersson-Hronek pair could look like. Mm. And if Myers can continue playing the way he has along Hughes.
Myers, Pettersson looked good too.
They did. At the same time, like, and I love what Myers has looked like, and we all enjoy it. The variance always comes, like, there's a lot of variance, right? Yeah. Like, the good never lasts too long. And to be fair,
he's been pretty consistent
the
last couple months.
He has.
Outside of overtime.
Yes. Yeah, but honestly, like, whatever, it's 3-on-3, it's fake hockey, but whatever, you're right. But yeah, I mean, can he keep this up? If Myers can keep this up, then yeah, you feel a lot better about it, but we know there is some variance to it. But if he's playing with Hughes, you have less worries, and you can always change things around, right? Yeah. And we'll see ultimately how it all goes, but you know, I like the mix. I see people texting in saying Dobson is coming to Vancouver. I know... who was it? Incarcerated Bob on Twitter, who sometimes is a bit of a rumor monger and throws some stuff out there. Some of it hits, a lot of it doesn't.
Yes.
I think he was kind of mentioning how the Canucks are after Noah Dobson. So we're getting texts about that too, about Noah Dobson. Is he coming to Vancouver?
Where does Dobson even fit?
Like, monetarily.
Honestly, monetarily. Where does he even fit? Yeah, you're going to have to pay him $8-9 million. Where does he fit?
Yeah. And you're paying Hronek 7.25. You're giving Pettersson 5.5. Hughes is making 7 and change. And Hughes is going to be making what? Maybe he might double that contract in a couple of years. How much are you going to spend on your back end? I mean, hey, maybe the Canucks just say we're winning with defense.
Yeah.
Right?
Doesn't work that way.
I mean, I just don't know how you make all the money work. Even if you move Myers, like let's say you move Myers and Soucy. Can you really afford to pay three guys north of $7 million and the fourth guy 5.5? I just don't know if you can make the money work.
Probably not. So it's, as we said yesterday on our Marcus Pettersson reaction podcast, the Canucks are pretty much done their spending on the back end. They're trying to take Carson Soucy's money out. Maybe they'll look at adding another veteran defenseman in the summer. But, you know, you've got a good mix in your top four now for next year with Hughes, Pettersson, Marcus Pettersson, Philip Pronick, and Tyler Myers, while also bringing up Elias Pettersson and Tom Volander over the next little while. So you mix in some veterans, third pair types to compete for spots with those guys and be able to have some cover to deal with young players' growing pains.
Yeah, and you also need to have some cheaper players supplementing. Yeah. And if you can get Elias Pettersson cheap the next few years, you have Rylander cheap the next few years, well, now you can afford to spend more upfront on different mm-hmm. players, right? It is interesting, though. Like, it's one of those things, can you put it past them to just say, we're going after what we can go after, and that's just being the best defensive team we can find? Because, I mean, it would be pretty sick if you have Hughes, Dobson, and yeah. then Hronek and Pettersson. That's your top four. That's probably the best top four in the league. But I just, that's, you know,
yeah.
it might be just too much.
To finish at the same time.
Yeah, it might just be too much investment there, right?
Yeah.
And besides, you're probably not getting Dobson without moving Volander anyways.
No. Would you need Volander at that point with Dobson?
And, no, you wouldn't.
Essentially, he would have roadblocks.
Years. He had to yeah. wait 6 years to be a top four defenseman.
He would have roadblocks with Philip Hronek and Noah Dobson on the roster. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah,